Hello, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Ian Cundall, Baseball America Prospect Podcast. It's a big one again this week. We have a new top 100 update. We have new top 30 updates, all of that over at baseballamerica.com. But we're going to talk today about the top 100. We're going to talk about really what we're going to do is we're going to highlight six players who all moved either on or significantly up on this update's top 100. And we're going to lay out a little bit why and kind of some of the interesting discussions around those players. But Ian, great to see you. Diving right in, I think this one's a fun one to talk about, which is we have added Rays outfielder Theo Gillen, center fielder, to our top 10 now. He is at the very back of the top 10 now, number 8 in the new rankings. He was 12, so I don't want to make it sound like that this was some, you know, dramatic leap up the rankings, but he is a top 10 prospect now. And I think that this has kind of been like, if you just track his progression over the season, it's all heading in one direction. We're not getting any kind of like caution to like, whoa, put more of the brakes on. When you talk to scouts, you talk to other, you know, front office officials, pretty consensus is this is a guy who is entering the top echelon of prospects in the game at this point.
Yeah. And I think it's funny because it's not just me. I think Josh has talked about it on here too. Like, you know, when you're talking to scouts who were down seeing the South Atlantic League, where Gillen started the season, all anyone wants to talk about was him. And he has he's taken a level up with his power. That's the biggest development last season. And it was more or less was his pro debut. He had 8 games after being signed. In 2024, he had 5 home runs. This year, he's already got 12 in 63 games. And his exit velocities are way up. You know, this is a guy who his 90th percentile EV is above 107 miles an hour right now, which is that's better than guys ahead of him on the list. That's, you know, near one of the top marks in the entire top 100. And when you have his raw hitting ability and then you combine it now with his ability to produce these, you know, well above average exit velocities, he's the total package at the plate, especially because he can also steal bases. You know, it's a plus runner too. So you have a guy now who's going to hit for power, average, and steal bases. But oh yeah, he can play center field. The arm is not great. I mean, if we're going to ding him for anything, it's the arm strength. It's a below
average. That's why he's in center field.
Exactly.
You will say high school shortstop. And it's like, nope, he won't play there.
Yeah. But I mean, he checks every other box. You know, talking to scouts, you hear things like some sevens on the hit tool. We have 460s, which is something we've heard from multiple people. You know, this is just, he's turned himself into one of the upper echelon prospects in all of baseball, as you said. And I think it's just a real testament because this isn't a guy who was that high of a pick. You know, who was he? A mid first round pick, I believe. 18th overall. You know, he was out of Chicago, or he was originally from Chicago. I think he went to high school, I believe, in Texas, right? But, you know, this wasn't one of the top 10, you know, picks or so. This was a high school guy, had some questions, started at shortstop, now he's in the outfield, and, you know, about just under 2 years has turned himself into one of the best outfield prospects in all of baseball.
And this is another guy who goes back to the adage of, well, why did they take this high school shortstop? They've always already got a shortstop. It's like, no, you take high school shortstops because you can think of that as like the clay that can be molded into whatever you need them to be. And yeah, this is an example of this. Theo Gillen is a very solid, a very good center fielder defensively now, a la Jackson Merrill, a guy who basically wasn't a center fielder, was a center fielder. Oh, you make him a center fielder, he's a good center fielder. It's something where high school, where do you put the best athlete on the field? You put him at shortstop. The high school shortstops are the best athletes on their team, and they could go a lot of different directions. But I think the key thing that says, like, where I feel like very comfortable about him is really, to be honest, even with the other, when we talk about the top tier of hitting prospects in the game right now, which we're a little bit lower than we were, because I mean, we just graduated a Connor Griffin and a Kevin McGonigal and a JJ Weatherholt. That was our 1-2-3 at the start of the year. I don't think there's no one in the Connor Griffin tier right now, and there's really no one in the Kevin McGonigal tier right now. Like, Jesus Mede is a very good prospect, but like, we have him kind of in one tier, which is a 70 average grade, and then we have all these guys who are in that next tier down, and that would be all still looking up at the Griffin, McGonigal, well, you know, like those guys at the start of the year. But of this group, I kind of like Gillen. It's really, if you said, what am I most worried about with Gillen? He missed second half of the year last year. He had kind of some injuries in high school. Like, I just wanted to stay healthy. which is always a concern. But other than that, like, I would say that with his hit tool, there's always the possibility that he ends up being less than we expect as far as power, as far as impact, all that. But it's really hard to see, like, if you're comparing him to, you know, like an Eli Willets, who's not far behind him. And again, Eli Willets has a pretty high floor because we think his defense is going to be good. He can run the bases. But like, okay, like to Max Clark, who he's now ahead of, I didn't actually feel more comfortable. I feel comfortable about Max Clark's hit tool, but I feel more comfortable about Gillen's. I feel more comfortable about Gillen's power. He really has kind of turned himself into very quickly a prospect without a whole lot of like glaring red flags left on the scouting report, didn't he?
Yeah, I think, as I said, the arm, and then the only other thing is there are some platoon splits. But the thing is, and I don't know if it seems like this is something just across all of baseball. There just are not a lot of lefties in the minors right now. And so, you know, it's 51 plate appearances this year against lefties. Is it 718 OPS versus against righties? His OPS is over 1050. So there's a split there, but I think that's one of those things that's just going to improve with reps. Like we see it in the big leagues this year, and someone who comes to mind is Willy Abreu with the Red Sox. You know, coming into the season, he really struggled against lefties. He's completely flipped that this year, and he's hitting lefties better than he's hitting righties. And so I think that's something that's going to improve as he gets more reps. But yeah, I mean, against righties, like he's one of, I think if you're going to talk about the guys that I would want facing a right-handed pitcher who are in the minors right now, it's probably him and Josue DePaula would be probably my top two choices, even ahead of guys like Jesus Mate and Leo DeVries, because I just think those two offensively, and ironically, you know, both outfielders, I think those two offensively just have some of the highest ceilings of anyone in the top 100.
With Madej, if you said, hey, you're going to be against a control artist, but you know, like a walk is what you need here also, that's where Madej is the guy. It's like, okay, you may spit on that pretty well.
Yeah.
But again, these are the elite prospects of the game. But we've talked about Gillen, you and I have a good bit this year. We've talked on the podcast about our next guy we're going to talk about, but we can't not talk about him because I would say at this point, we talked about Theo Gillen and how many conversations you're having with people about Theo Gillen. I feel like you're having as many about Eric Hartman, who, let's be clear, when the season started, Theo Gillen has ascended to the top 10, but Theo Gillen came into the year as absolutely an elite prospect who you just wanted to see. He had 73 games, I think, last year. You just want to see more. You want to see him do it more, do it at a higher level. Eric Hartman came into the year as a back of the Braves top 30 prospect who now, when we were talking about this, he joined the list in early May. He then, the next time we did the update, we were like, nope, you are on a rocket ship. And I believe it was 60 or somewhere around there. And here we are a month later, and he's still a high A-roam. You know, we kind of were expecting like maybe at some point we'll go to double A, although I'll tell you that is a terrible place to hit. It was Mississippi. Columbus is still not great. It's better than Mississippi was. But here we are. We put him 25 on the list. And I do feel like that Ian, like this is one where I could make an argument at like 13, 14, or I could make an argument at 45, 50. And I feel like I could make the case for it because this is that balance of impact versus risk. And the risk with Eric Hartman is not, well, there are some hit tool risk. There's some real hit tool risk here, but it's more the length of track record of doing this where you're like, okay, are we going overboard on what's now half of a minor league season? But how easy is it to not go overboard on a guy who's athletic, who's an impact defender in center field, and who's on his way to maybe a 40, 60 season? I can't believe I'm saying that, but he's halfway through the season and he's at, as we record this, he's at 19 homers and 27 steals, 29 steals. So
29
steals. So 2020 could be done basically by the end of this week. And 30-30 would be like, oh, he tailed off really bad in the second half. How hard is it, though, to calibrate where to put him and what could trip up Eric Hartman?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think what you said, it really sums it up well, that it's, you have to balance the risk with the upside here, because this is a guy who in terms of training age for baseball is well below a lot of his peers, even the high A, because he's a guy who came from Canada. He didn't have the same exposure coming out of that. He doesn't have the same, you know, buildup of reps that a guy even like Theo Gillen had coming out of a high school in Texas. So he's just a lot newer, and he's still learning on the job in a weird way. Like, I know you talk to outfielders, and it's like, or excuse me, talk to evaluators, and great tools. Like, they think he can play in center field eventually. Right now, not very good out there because he's kind of just learning on the job. He's an insane athlete. He might be an 80 runner, but he's kind of learning how to play baseball still because he was a hockey player growing up. And
I just want to note with that, like, I can see, yes, you're right. He's not good right now, although he also does make some highlight plays. Yes. Although those highlight plays often become where he took a bad read a little bit, took a step, and then he's like, oh, and then once he kicks in the afterburners, it's like, he covers ground really quickly, makes a dive in catch. You're like, that was a great play.
Yeah.
He may have made it a little harder for himself at the start than you needed to. Sorry.
Continue. Yeah, no. But, and so like, he still is on the raw side. And yet, as you said, he's on pace to go 20-30 before the All-Star break while hitting close to 300 with a 360 OBP and a slug above 550. And everything, when you look at the data too, you look at the, you watch him on video, like, hits the ball extremely hard. And, you know, that's something as we talked about with Gillen, we've talked about it with a lot of guys. If you hit the ball hard, it goes a long way in terms of your prospect status. And the thing that makes him so interesting, though, is he pairs it with elite athleticism. It's 70 to 80 run times, depending on who you talk to. It's the hit tool right now, as you said, there is some risk there. And I think that's what's baked into his ranking. Because if you're just going off raw tools and like future value, taking out risk, he's probably in the top 10 of all of, I would say, of our top one. He would rank in the top 10 if you're taking risk out of the equation. You obviously have to factor risk in when you're doing these evaluations. And that's why he's at 25. He's not in that elite tier yet. But if he continues showing the skills that he has so far and continues to build on them as the season goes on and into next season, he has the ability to be able to make that jump eventually. It's just little things like, hey, cut down the chase. Like, you know, his chase rate right now is close, it's a little under 30%, which is too high. But again, this is a guy who does not have a ton of baseball experience. I have more faith that someone like him will improve on that than someone who we have a long track record dating back to their, you know, freshman year of high school, where we've seen it over and over again in showcase tournaments. You have, because a lot of these draftees, they come in with a baseline of, you know, 500-600 pitches. You and Carlos have talked about it on the draft podcast before. You know, you can get data on high schoolers now, going back to chase rates, contact rates, everything. You know, we just don't have a lot of that with Hartman. We're still building that baseline. And that's why he's such a fascinating player to talk to with scouts, because coming into the year, you know, last year, he hit five home runs and had a 699 OPS. You know, it, as an 18-year-old, very good. But it wasn't someone who was jumping off the page. You know, he ranked near the back of the top 30. This year, you knew right away. You know, there were people in April. I came to you in April and I was like, hey, we might need to watch out for this guy. And it's only spiraled from there. And yeah, I mean, he's a really exciting player. And he's really fun to watch. You know, just the way he hits, the way he approaches the game, it's a very unique swing. We talked about it, I think, on here, but it's like a reverse arm bar kind of with the way he swings, because there's some hockey shot influences
I've never heard reverse arm bar before, but I think it's a good description.
Yeah. And that's, it also leads to a huge air pull rate, which obviously we know is a lot of teams covet that these days. So I think another thing that's going to be interesting with him, and why it's a good time to have him in a fair spot, is he's probably going to be one of the most asked players at the deadline, assuming the Braves are buyers. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how that kind of gets handled. But yeah, I think, you know, we ended up in a really good spot with Hartman, and I've been very happy with our process in getting him there. I think that we've been very realistic in, you know, gathering more info and adjusting as necessary. And that's the whole thing with this. It's all a snapshot in time. And so that's why things can change. And I don't feel bad about, you know, missing out on Hartman in the off season versus now. You know, these guys, they're humans. They can improve. And he's done a great job of that. The Braves deserve a ton of credit for it too.
We studied this, like, I did a study that came up at baseballamerica.com yesterday. It's up, you know, still there now, about like how guys do that we add in season. And one of the things that does stand out is especially, again, I'm only studying a couple of years now. We've only been doing the monthly updates like this since 2022, I believe. I'm going to go back. Maybe we did in 21. I was here. I should remember this, but like maybe we did more often. We've been doing mid-season updates for years and years, because I mean, I that was something else. And one of the first things I got to be in charge of this prospect side on like 2009, 2010. But one of the things that stands out is the guys who leap onto the 100 in May are often the guys who you're like, ooh, I'm really glad that we added that guy, right? Because, and I would say if you said, well, why is that? It's like, because that's kind of the time where, okay, if you say like, well, what, give me an example of that. Well, like Pete Crow Armstrong joining it in 2022, right? Where known to be a great defender, but then we saw more offensive impact and then he took a kind of a leap. Or, you know, Bryce Terang, you know, joined in May of 22. And again, these were guys we knew more about than we know about. Those were prominent, you know, first round pick type guys, but you know, Jackson Churio joining and guys like that, where it's like, okay, early season guys who pop are guys who often it's because they've established a new level. And I think you spelled it out really well there, which is there's no way to rank that guy that high coming out of last season, going into this season. He had to make the leap. You can say he's got tools, but you need to see some of that before you're like, oh, this is where this guy is. Speaking of that, got another guy who's actually, I would say, we really are going with the bats right here, but another guy whose hit tool is one of the best in the lower minors and a guy whose bat is really, who's carried him into the top 30. We'll cover that right after this quick break.
Hey, SeatGeek is MLB's official ticket marketplace. And in addition to finding every single game on the MLB calendar, there are big events coming up very soon.
There's an all-star game. There's a home run derby. And if you think you're perfect and you can pick the right seat at the home run derby to get the most home run balls, you can get the little green dot, and that might be your lucky seat. Don't go red dot, though, because you might not get any balls. But go red, green dot. And get as many home run balls as you think you can catch.
Yep. You click the seat. You check out what your view is. Each ticket's rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. And that's what AJ's talking about. Green good, red bad, with those dots. And the code for you, Territory10, for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any MLB tickets with promo code Territory10. Make sure you click the link in the description of this episode. That'll help you download the app and get the code automatically added to your account so that you can use it later. Thank you to SeatGeek.
And we're back. So another guy that we had a lot of fun talking about and figuring out where to slot is Cubs outfielder Josiah Hartshorne, who we talked about Eric Hart, we talked about Theo Gillen. Those are center fielders. Gillen's a little bit more polished at it right now than Hartman, but both of those we feel like are going to be center fielders in Hartman's case, or he'll be a really speedy corner. Hartshorne is going to be a bat. He could be a corner outfielder or a first base. You're not counting on any real significant value from the defensive profile. And you could be like, well, then how is that guy a top 30 prospect in the game? And I would say, if the bat's good enough, you just don't care. And you're just like, okay, give me an example of that. I'm glad we had Jordan Alvarez really high years and years ago. And Jordan Alvarez had no defensive value, was a first baseman, left fielder, DH. But if the bat's that good, and Ian, I feel like that the bat could be this good with Josiah Hartshorne.
Yeah. I mean, it's what he's doing is really impressive. And he's an interesting one because he was a sixth round pick, but that's deceiving because he signed for $2 million. So clearly the Cubs value him is around a second rounder. And what he's done this year has been nothing short of spectacular. You know, got a pretty aggressive assignment, went to low A, he had an 884 OPS. And since he's been promoted to high A, his OPS has increased by 200 points or 150 points. He's now hitting 315, 385 with a 630 slug in high A. And the thing that really just stands out for me, and, you know, you look at, he basically walks as much as he strikes out. He's got one of the most advanced approaches, I think, you know, when we're looking at, especially for his age, let alone probably even some of the guys, other guys in the top 100 taking age out of it. You look at the underlying data, it backs up the approach. He doesn't chase. He makes good swing decisions. When he does swing, he rarely misses. And, oh yeah, he's also got power. It's a really appealing skill set, especially if you have limited defensive value. He checks all the boxes offensively with that. So yeah, this is more of the out of left field one, similar to the Hartman than someone like Gillen, who was well inside I think he was in the mid 50s when we started the season. But
this was a sixth round pick last year.
Yeah. Out of high school. But it's hard to argue with the production when it's backed up then by underlying data and scouting or, talking to evaluators. When you have that, all three of those supporting it, I'm fine being aggressive on someone like this. Because at the end of the day, betting on the hit tool, it can get you really far in this game.
And so I think it's worth laying out here, right? So usually I'll give an analogy that for younger people than me, but hey, I do love video games too, right? So if you've got MLB The Show, if you've got Madden or whatever, you know, you got the sliders, right? And usually what happens is you can either move this up or you can move this up, right? And a lot of times with hitters, that's kind of what we're talking about, right? Young hitters, it's like you'll get that this guy here has elite power, you know, like you see the EVs right now, and he has adequate swing decisions, maybe, which would be a very good combo, right? Mm-hmm. But then you see like, okay, he's, you know, then you see like there's a passivity to it or an over aggressiveness to it. There's a problem about his, you know, he can't really handle sliders, you know, in this, like there's an end zone issue. Usually it's like, okay, you've got this well, you've got this a little bit, and you really don't have this. You got to develop it. You know, another guy may be like, oh, he's got great Caden Bodine, the Rays who just promoted catcher. Caden Bodine's contact skills are among the best of the minors. Like they're mm-hmm. top tier. The EVs, no, that's not what you're going to get. The ability to pull the ball in the air consistently for power, that's not what you're going to get, right? So most, even really good prospects in the minor leagues, it's like you've got this, you don't have this. And usually the key thing, the difference between that and say like Tony Blanco Jr., who has the best EVs in the minor leagues year after year after year, is like, okay, that slider's maxed out at 100 on the slider. And everything else is kind of like is worrisome, right? So you need a little bit more of a balance of it to be an elite prospect. But in Hartshorn's case, I hesitate to say this because Kevin McGonigal was the unique unicorn last year where we wrote about it in the offseason. It's like there is nothing that Kevin McGonigal as a hitter is not elite at. His swing decisions are elite, his pitch recognition is elite, his aggressiveness is appropriate, his power is elite. Like all of these things were like, if you said, show me the best in the minor leagues at this, he was good at all of them. Josiah Hartshorn's not at that level of like, he's in the top 10 percentile of everything, but he's in the top 20 percentile of everything. If you consider especially his age and love for appropriateness for level and all of mm-hmm. this, a 30-year-old doing it in AAA is not the same thing as a teenager doing it in high A. Again, there's not a whole lot of defensive value here. He's a switch hitter who is better against right-handers than lefties right now. Although against lefties, he knows how to take a walk, you know, which is enough of a skill, a survival skill to do that so far. And again, in his case, I think it's like he has 52 plate appearances against lefties. So it's a switch hitter. You know, yeah. There's a lot to like here. There's a lot of reasons why we were that aggressive with it. And again, like you said, yes, we're balancing risk, but in his case, if you really believe in the bat, I mean, really what you're talking about, okay, we got Orange Lutheran here, California high school kid. We've got Ralphie Velasquez, you know, kind of coming up, yep. Who's the Huntington Beach kid, you know, and it's like, we're betting on bats in both those cases, but the bats are really, really good. So there's another guy, speaking of hit tools, Jason Churia, the Guardians outfielder, returns to the 100 and very aggressively. We put him back in the 40s. And I get it. Like, I want to say, like, I want to be completely transparent about it. We lay out, you can go to baseballamerica.com and see every top 100 update going back to 2022. So if you're like wondering how often we yo-yo a guy on and off, it's there. You can see it, you know. But so I want to start by saying Jason Churio's been in this range before on the 100, and then he dropped off of it. And you say, well, why did he drop off? Last year, he was hurt. But last year, it really was like we did not see the impact. We did not see the ability to hit the ball with even a reasonable amount of, you know, impetus behind it. Like power is not going to be Jason Churio's game, but the power absolutely disappeared last year. You got to have some gap power and all. Go ahead, Ian.
Yeah, no, I was just going to provide some context on that. Last year, Jason Churio had a 286 slug, 286. And as you said, he was hurt, but it was still an 87-game sample size. His EVs, you're looking at, you know, 90th is just around 102, 102 miles an hour. And I mean, you saw, and the average EV was the one that I would flag with him. Cause as you said, he's not really a power hitter. His average EV last year was just over 87 miles an hour, which is not great.
87 games last year, 10 extra base hits, 7 doubles, yeah. a triple, and 2 homers. So we dropped him off the 100 because as much as we like Jason Chirio's ability to get on base, his hitting ability, and his potential to be an impact defender, that profile just no. Thankfully, and again, as we always say, we root for prospects here. It is very cool to see that Jason Chirio is healthy, and he's back to being the guy that we thought he was in 24 when he had a very impactful season. Like, again, power's not his game, but so far, 13 doubles, 2 triples, 6 home runs, 460 slugging, and that's like a 170 ISO. You can give a little bit more context behind that as well, but putting it all together, this is the guy that we saw in 24. He's healthy, so there's the plate discipline, there's the drawing walks, there's the stealing. He's already stolen 17 bags this year. He stole 10 last year. He's just better. He's just healthy again. We're putting him back where he was now that we feel comfortable. We didn't want to go overboard too quickly on, okay, let's see him, how he holds up. Now that he's holding up, it's like the reviews are put him back where he was. But any further context?
Yeah, just like his average EV is up 4 miles an hour this year. His hard hit rate is up. Like, he's just impacting the ball at a much higher level. The quality of contact has improved drastically. And when you're a player like him, who's not going to be an over-the-fence power guy, is more gap to gap, you need that quality of contact. Because you can't, we've seen it over and over again. If MLB pitchers know you're not going to be able to punish them, they don't care. Nick Madrigal, I think, is the best example of that we've had in recent years. And I think we're seeing it with some of the younger guys who've gone up into the big leagues this year. You know, some of the guys like Justin Crawford, it's kind of like pitchers have realized he's not going to do any damage against them. So if you need, there's a certain barrier you need to be able to do. And I think Chirio has reached that level with the hard hit rate, with the average EVs, that now that, hey, if you make a mistake, he's going to hit it in the gap. And because of his speed, he's going to play it into a triple probably. And that's kind of going to be his game. You know, he's going to probably not be a ton of home runs, even in the major league level. But if he can just be a well above average hitter, get on base at an extremely high clip, and, you know, add 8-10 home runs, that's going to be a very, very valuable player given his secondary skills.
And even with kind of the semi-loss season last year, he's a 21-year-old now in AA in the Eastern League. So he's also young for the level.
Yep.
The Guardians, again, I know it gets repetitive, but there are systems where it's like, oh, you know, the Guardians have a ton of bats. Like, we could talk about Unikur Caceres here. You know, we talked about Ralphie Velasquez for a minute there. We could talk about, they have more catchers right now. Like, it's an absurd number of catchers. And I had to add another catcher to their top 30 this month because they have a catcher who leads the minors in OBP. And by the way, he's not bad defensively, and there's some pedigree and all that as well. It's something where it's like, okay, speaking of, like, we're going to get to the Brewers in a little while too, because you could sit here. We could literally make this a Brewers podcast, and we could talk for 3 hours about how many interesting guys they have. But after the break, we're going to go to something that's a little different. We're going to talk about an Orioles pitching prospect joining the top 100. They've had a lot more hitters in the 100 the last few years than pitchers, but we have one of those, and we'll talk about that right after this quick break. So, Ian, we're back. And this was one that you really pushed for. We kind of started to get impetus for it last month. And we're like, you know what? Let's be cautious. A month later, it became a very easy decision that Orioles lefty Joseph Zerwa is now a top 100 prospect.
Yeah. And I think for me, and why I agreed with being cautious at the time, was this is a college guy from, I mean, the Big Ten, you know, not the best baseball conference, but it's still a good one. And
I don't know how much that pains Ian to say that, by the way.
Well, especially because of the school he went to, but, he got up to double A, and he's been better in double A than he was in high A. And I think that's what really put it over the top for me, is, you know, seeing him as kind of against more age appropriate competition. Teams are obviously pushing their, as I think, especially hitters more aggressively now. So you get up to high A even, and you're facing, as I mean, we mentioned, if Jason Chirio was there, he's 21 and he's one of the older guys. Josiah Hartshorn is there. Eric Hartman, also in high A. Those guys are teenagers still. And so you want to see someone like Jirwa, especially given he doesn't really have right now, his third pitch is kind of a work in progress, do it against better competition. And that's exactly what he's done. He's gone up to double A. He's got 46 strikeouts and 35 and 2/3 innings, 9 walks. And I think the thing with me, or for me with him, is that there's just such a high floor, because he's a 6'8 lefty with a deceptive delivery and a plus changeup. And we have seen that type of player pitch in the big leagues before. You know, Andrew Miller made a career of being a two-pitch lefty who's huge size and a deceptive delivery. that's kind of the baseline you're looking at with someone like Jerwood, because he throws a ton of strikes is the other part too. For the season, I think, yeah, he has 19 walks in 76 and third innings this year. So
I love strike percentage, 68% strike percentage this year. 68% is really like about as high as really, to be honest, as you want to go. You get much over that, and much as you said about like that the pitchers won't respect you if they know that you can't do anything. The flip side of that is if you never miss, hitters are going to be like, oh, I just swing all the time because you're always around the zone.
Yep.
But I want to bring up one other stat with him. I think this is crucial. Like, we're seeing a lot now. We're seeing in the minor league game this year, and we're probably going to do a full podcast about this at some point. We've done stories about this at baseballamerica.com, but the absolutely bonkers increase in home run rate in the minors affects both hitters and pitchers. And I had a chat question this week about why is Rays pitcher Santiago Suarez struggling this year? It's like, remember what we just said about the strike rate and the 68%? Santiago Suarez has among the best command in baseball. He's always in the zone. But the problem is he went from last year where if you were always in the zone and the home run rate in a league is like 0.6, 0.7 per game, you're not getting punished for that.
No.
Now the home run rate's like 1.1 home runs per game in a lot of these leagues. And his home run rate has skyrocketed. That's led to his problems. Zerwa has allowed 2 home runs in 76 innings this year. If you want to ask me, like, what are the keys to his success? Throw strikes, have a changeup, and do that. But the other thing that I wanted to bring up, you said like that doing it in double A. The key thing to me with that is this. I hate to say it, but if you're a changeup pitcher having success in A ball, I almost don't care.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have to be a great changeup.
No.
If in low A, if you have a 40 changeup and you have belief in it and any kind of fastball, you can just carve lineups. Those are hitters who have never seen that. And every time they see it, they swing out of their shoes thinking, nope, fastball, I'm hit. Oh, okay, I'm going back. You know, double A, you start to see that starts to filter out a little bit, and he's still doing it. So
yeah,
that's what you want to see.
Well, yeah. And the thing that it also excites me about him, what he's doing is he's doing this without his best velocity. We saw him back in the spring breakout game. And I think one of the big things I've learned this year is take spring training velocities with an absolute grain of salt, because we've seen a bunch of pitchers this year who were showed big velo during spring, and it's kind of tailed off, obviously, because it's very different environment when you're throwing 3 innings at when your arm is perfectly fresh versus as the dog days of the season go on. But he's pitching, you know, he's sitting 92, 93 miles an hour up to 96. But his fastball has a whiff rate over 30%. And as you said, the strike rate is well over 70% on it. Like, that's a really good combination when you pair that with the changeup. And even though the breaking balls don't scout as well as their whiff rates would suggest, if he can just get one of those to average, like, it's easy to envision him developing into a mid-rotation starter. And even if he doesn't, he probably could still be a back-end guy, which is, I think, plays into the floor aspect of it. Like, worst case, he's a reliever. But worst case truly might just be he's a number 4, number 5 starter, which is, we've seen, is a very valuable player in this day and age.
I just think he is actually a relatively easy. You get to the back of the list, there are guys who did not make this. I'll tell you right now, like, we had a long discussion about Owen Ayers, who we talked about on the podcast recently. And he's not on the 100 right now. I think he'll join it before long. But, like, long discussions. We had more guys. I will say, the good thing I feel good about is normally at this time of year, it feels like it starts getting really light. We had more guys that we wanted to put on the 100 than we have spots. Like, Wyatt really Sanford dropped off. Not because we thought Wyatt Sanford needed to drop off, just because we had guys we felt we needed to add. We hate yo-yoing guys, but at the same time, when we're just saying you do 100, you only put 100. And one of the reasons that we had to, that we felt we needed to yo-yo off Wyatt Sanford is because we felt like we needed to get this guy on. Brewers outfielder Alexander Frias joins the top 100, very back of the list. But, okay, let me just lay this out. Are you having a sense of deja vu, listener or viewer? So the Brewers have this international prospect who's moving really fast. And kind of, you know, the hope was is that, you know, he'd be in the complex this year. But, you know, he just was too good, had to be moved up to low A. And, oh, yeah, by the way, early on in his low A, the reviews are very good about the bat. I could be talking about Jackson Churio. I could be talking about Jesus Bede, and now I'm talking about Alexander Frias. Now, not saying he's going to be Churio, not saying he's going to be Bede. At the same time, Ian, you said we like to bet on bats. We're betting on a bat here, and this is a bat that seems like there's a lot of reasons to be very encouraged by what we're seeing so far, aren't we?
100%. And it's, I think also, and I don't know if you feel the same way, him being with the Brewers gives me even more confidence because Brewers' track record with pushing the guys they choose to push tend to be worth it. And you mentioned Churio, you mentioned Mate, Luis Pena, I think is another one who falls into that camp. You know, if they're pushing a Latin signing aggressively, they clearly think that there's something there. And I mean, it's hard to argue with the production so far. In the ACL this year, he hit 441, 518, 678 slug in 32 games. He had four home runs. Yeah, pretty good.
I'll translate that if you are just, you know, somehow stumbled into the 35th minute of a Baseball America Prospect podcast and you're not aware, that's a very good batting average. That's a very good on base and a very good slug. Yeah,
it is. Yeah,
by the way, he still has enough games to qualify. So he still leads the ACL right now in batting average by 69 points. You know, like I know the ACLs, you know, can be pretty offensive, but he's when you say he's running away with it, like I think he has a chance. Like that season doesn't have that much longer to go.
It was like 2 weeks, I think.
2 weeks to go. You know, the way this works is that you get 2.7 plate appearances per game played for your team, right? For the scheduled game for your team. So in his case, he won't get to the PAs. But if you don't, and you could take an offer for the number of plate appearances you need to be the batting champ, you still can. You could take a lot of offers to get to 69 points. So sorry to interrupt you, but I'm going to be figuring that while you do this. Yeah.
No, that's an interesting one. Because, yeah, I mean, and he rightfully got promoted. I mean, we talk about a guy hitting 441, and since it's really small sample up in high A, but he's already hit his first, or excuse me, low A, but he's already hit his first home run. But I think the thing that stood out to me is, you know, the EVs are really, really good for someone his age. You know, we talked about Eric Hartman, Theo Gillen, like, Frias is not that far behind those guys in terms of EVs, and he has a max of 116.3 this year, which is, you know, if that was a major leaguer with that max, that you'd be very happy with that mark. He's 18 years old. And I think that there's power upside. There's definitely hit tool questions. You know, he's not the pure hitter that some of the other, I think, Brewers prospects who have been pushed this aggressively were, but there's just a lot to like. I mean, Josh, I think, I don't know if we posted it, but there'd be a video of his swing and, you know, I think everything I've seen aesthetically looks fine with it. You know, it's just, he's got to get more reps. He's got to get more exposure to stateside pitching. But yeah, I mean, this is the guy that he's built like an SEC running back. Like he's very physical for his age. He's listed at 60, 177. I would guess he's heavier than that right now. You know, it's good body, good athlete. He can really hit. He's got power. Like he checks all the boxes you look for in a 18-year-old FCL, you know, upside projection play. And I just think it's a matter of, you know, where the hit tool develops. You hear this time and time again, but if it's a 50 hit tool, this guy's probably an everyday regular. If it's a 40 hit tool, you know, maybe he's a platoon bench bat. If it's a 30, we'll see. So there's a lot of variance in his profile, which is why he's at the back of 100, but there's also a ton to like here.
I'll also add, if he's a 441 hitter like he is in the Arizona Complex League, he's a star.
Yeah, he might be. I don't know what the track record of those guys are.
So by my math, he needed to be at 162 plate appearances to qualify. He has, when I say way less than that, he has 25 short of that.
Yeah.
Normally you would say that no one could take an O for 25 and still be a batting champ, but that would get him down to 364. So
it's implied. Could.
It would be awesome to have a guy hit 441 and qualify for a batting crown, even in a short season league. That would be really, really cool.
Yeah.
So. Again, we had other guys who we could absolutely have put on this 100. I would say my regret is Owen Ayers, because I do think that he should be on here, and we'll get him on at some point, I think, before too long. You know, we also drop guys off. If you want to know more about that, Josh Norris has a piece where he explains why guys rose, why guys fell, why guys went on, why guys went off. Some cases where you go off again, it's like Wyatt Sanford went off, and it's not because we thought anything other than we wanted to get Alexander Frias on. There's a Rockies prospect we wanted to get on as well. We want to get some of these guys who are really popping in the complex leagues and we're hearing good, not just, again, let me be clear. Alexander Frias is not on this 100 because he hit 441 in the ACL. It helped, but it's when that's part of the production he's having leads into the calls, leads into the analyzing the data. It's like when you get the scouting feedback, when you get the data and it all comes together, well, then that's when you have a guy, you're moving on. There are guys who absolutely, again, we've had questions, we've answered questions about Manuel Payne. Manuel Payne's had a great year. Statistics aren't enough to get you on the 100. Someone will say like, oh, so-and-so deserves to be on the 100. I hate to say it. It's not a deserved thing. It's got to be something where it's backed by that quality evaluators see it, that, you know, that the underlying data matches what you're seeing as far as production. All those things fit into it. But man, I'll just say, this is my little ode, as I often like to do, to BA subscribers. Thank you guys for subscribing, because we hope you enjoy what we're producing. But I will tell you right now, we love producing it. I mean, because that top 100 meeting yesterday that we had to kind of get ready for this, that was a whole lot of fun, wasn't it, Ian?
Yeah, great time. What, 3 hours just, you know, talking through guys, had some really spirited discussions, get to hear a bunch of different viewpoints. Because I think the fun part about being a BA is, you know, you have so many different voices. You have people coming at from different angles, and you have people who are talking to different people. So we really are blanketing, you know, the entire country with who we're talking to, which provides a lot of different viewpoints, which I think is extremely valuable in something like this.
And the great thing is we all have the teams that we're doing. Like, we just all did, like, I think we each did 6 or 7 or something like that, top 30s that we updated. And even that's a team effort, though. That's like, it's like I'm getting a note from Josh saying, hey, you should check on this guy for the White Sox. And a guy who ended up not making the 30, but it was a great guy to be asking about, who's right on the edge of the 30. And I could have put him in, kind of guy. Like, and you know, then I'll hear something like, hey, did you hear the check on this guy? You know, and you'll hear something. We're not just doing it all in our little silos. We're all doing it and saying, hey, the whole goal here is to put together the best and also the fastest. I would say that the two things we want to be the best rankings out there of anyone, public side. I mean, we're not trying to compete with, if you tell me that, you know, fill in the blank team has better overall, okay, I would hope so. But, you know, I would say, I hate to say it, at times there may be teams that have really cut back that maybe they don't, but, you know, that's bad if it is the case. But on the public side, we want to have the best rankings, but also we want to have the fastest ranking, because we do think that there is a important value to putting Eric Hartman on our top 100 and running him up early, so Baseball America subscribers know about that player before anyone who doesn't have Baseball America. That's important. Mm-hmm. Josiah Hartshorn, who's joined and now has run up the list. Guys like that, Alexander Frias. Again, we want you to know, will we every now and then be a little bit too aggressive on a guy? Sure, but we just talked about it. We try to be careful too. Like, we absolutely could have put Zerwa on this list a month ago. We wanted to be careful, and now we feel better about doing it. We will at times pull a guy off again, you know, because, okay, we were a little bit too hasty. Thankfully, that happens a lot less than guys keep moving up. When guys have injuries, maybe they'll be down. But what we're hoping to see is you see the guy come in, establish themselves at either complex or A ball, and have, you know, this is what you think this player is going to be. And at that point, their range of outcomes, I loved how you put it with Frias, right? The range of outcomes for Alexander Frias right now spans the gamut. And the flip side of that is the range of outcomes, like we said, for Ralphie Velasquez, still high, but Ralphie Velasquez is a big leaguer. Like, there's no scenario where Ralphie Velasquez is just never going to hear the, you know, like, get a chance to show what he can do in the big leagues. His range of outcomes has narrowed. Like, you don't question defensively. Ralphie Velasquez as a high school draft prospect was like, okay, there's a 1% chance he's a catcher, because that's what you're doing. There's a 10% chance he's an outfielder, and then we'll see if he can play first base. Now he's a first baseman who's got still a 10% chance to play outfield and a 0.0% chance to catch. But so that's been narrowed. But then if you said, well, what do we know about Ralphie Velasquez as a hitter? We feel much more confident about that than we did when he was coming out of Huntington Beach. That range of outcomes has narrowed in a good way, right? Like, when he was coming out of Huntington Beach, you could say he could be anywhere from a 20 hitter to a 70 hitter, because look, Alex Jackson, when he was coming out as a catcher who probably wasn't going to catch, who was a top 10 pick in the draft, he was viewed years ago as like, oh, this guy could be a 70 hitter. And he ended up being more like a 20 or a 30 hitter. That's the range for a high school bat in the draft. At this point, Ralphie's range is probably much more of he could be a 40 hitter to a 60 or maybe a little bit more, but that's narrowed. Alexander Frias is really still is. He could be a 20 hitter. He could be a 70 because he's a lot further away. That's the fun part of this. That's why we love doing this. So that is the Baseball America Prospect Podcast for this week. Our top 100 update. Check it all out. So much at baseballamerica.com. And by the way, that's just on the prospect side. If you like the draft as well, we have 500 reports up there for that. We are expanding our senior sign list up to 100 or more, hopefully before long, with reports. And then we have a mock draft that's up, draft intel that is up. And by the way, we will have a staff draft that will roll out. And by the way, we will have a YouTube version of the staff draft. We'll go really deep on that one coming up as well. And that's just to get, there's so much more. We have futures game rosters coming. We have so much more coming at baseballamerica.com. For Ian, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.